Chapter 4, 141. Though the brightness that had assaulted Nairo's senses had dissipated, the boy Lorgar still shimmered with a strange gleam of power. The slave considered the possibility it was simply an effect of a quick onset of desert fever, for he had fallen out of the shade of the sun sails and had returned to consciousness beneath the furnace heat of the long noon sun. He waited for the master and his new charge to reach the shrine wagon, pausing beside the water butt to refresh them once they had ascended. His hand stopped short of the ladle when the first shots rang out over the camp. From his position on the deck of the temple rig, he saw the sparkle of fusils slash through the shade, accompanied by the blur of arrows and slingstave bullets. Larger projectiles, flame stars and spear launcher javelins, crashed and whipped into the canopies of the encampment, pulping and piercing those who had incurred Cor Faron's wrath. He tore his eye from the bloody spectacle to see what Lorgar made of the sudden violence. Nairo expected dismay or shock, anger even, but the child placidly watched the unfolding scene, showing not even the smallest evidence of perturbation. If there was anything to be read in Lorgar's expression, it was a slight regret, perhaps, a tilt of the head and purse of the lips that made Nairo wonder if the child had been expecting this outcome. He seemed remarkably unflustered by all the other events that had swept up around him, and there was something knowing about his manner, far beyond his years. The master pushed the child towards the ladder and bade him climb. Beyond, Cor Faron's guards now had blades and mauls in hand, hacking and clubbing down the last of the declined. Some were already dragging the nomad's belongings from the tents, setting fire to the emptied pavilions. Others were leading the sternbacks and sunstriders out of their corral to be added to the beasts of the caravan. It was not the first time Nairo had seen such acts, and he knew that by the time Restive had passed, the bodies would be buried by the sands, the ashes scattered by the winds, the smoke dispersed into the upper airs, and nothing would remain of Fan Morgai and his tribe. Their souls the powers would reward or punish as they saw fit, likely subjected to everlasting torture in retribution for a lifetime of faithlessness, if Cor Faron's lectures were to be believed. Lorgar reached the top of the ladder, and Nairo proffered a hand to help him through the gap in the gunwale. He hesitated, about to pull back his fingers before they touched the unnatural child. Their eyes met again, and Nairo read curiosity in the violet gaze. He remembered it was a boy who ascended, not one of the powers, and gripped his wrist to pull him over the threshold. 142. The child, still swathed in his nomad clothing, almost fell onto the deck, righting himself at the last moment with a fierce grip on the shawl of Nairo. Cor Faron hauled himself through the opening just after, darting an irritated look at the slave.
"Water!"
he snapped, flicking a finger towards the keg.
"I'm as parched as the Lancaxa sand straits. Now!"
Nairo dipped the ladle into the water and filled a metal cup for his master, offering with eyes averted. He heard Cor Faron take three large gulps, droplets pattering to the deck, evaporating almost immediately despite the shade of the awning above. The cup was thrust back into his hand, and Nairo looked up. He moved to fill it again for the boy, but Cor Faron shook his head.
"He does not drink yet."
"Who are these people?"
Lorgar asked, looking at the slaves going about their various tasks.
"The forgotten, the unclean, the unworthy," said Cor Faron. "Slaves."
"And what do they do?"
"Whatever I demand of them."
Lorgar absorbed this information without gesture or comment, but his brow creased slightly beneath the ragged edge of his headscarf.
"And what did they do to deserve such treatment?"
Cor Faron grimaced and loomed over the child.
"Firstly, child, you will address me as my master or bearer of the word. Secondly, you will not ask questions until invited to do so. I will teach you the truth. Concern yourself only with such lessons as I deem right. I will indulge you a moment longer, as you are new to the path of enlightenment."
The preacher pointed at Nairo and swept his fingers across the rig to encompass the others who had been made outcast.
"They are slaves because they offended the powers."
"And
Who arbitrates such offences, my master? Lorgar asked, innocence radiating from his face.
For how long is the punishment administered?
You misunderstand, Lorgar. You must learn to pay more attention if you are to seek the truth. They are slaves. A miserable position to be in, so one must conclude that in order to suffer such a fate, the powers must be punishing them. You heard my sermon. To each a path is shown by the powers, and each will walk it as the powers desire. They are slaves because the powers wish it to be so. If the powers no longer desire them to be slaves, they will find fresh positions and freedom. It is not in the judgment of mortals to inflict or release such bondage.
Lorgar accepted this wisdom with a thoughtful look. Nairo saw no compassion in the boy's strange eyes, but there was also none of the coldness and disdain of the guards, nor the venom and cruelty of Corpheron.
Master?
Nairo touched his fingertips to his eyes as apology for the interruption.
Where is Lorgar to sleep, to eat? Will he stay with you, or billeted with the guards?
The master considered the question for a moment before a flicker of a sly smile twisted his lips.
He will eat, sleep, and pray with your kind, Nairo. He will attend higher lessons when I call for him without delay. If he is tardy, you will all be punished. And get him out of those stinking declined rags. I'll not have my pupil dressed as a faithless sand rat. You will find proper acolyte's garb in my largest chest.
Nairo acknowledged his instructions with a nod and a knuckle to his forehead.
Am I to be a slave, my master?
Asked Lorgar. As with everything thus far, the wondrous child seemed intrigued rather than afraid, angered or perplexed.
That is the first aspect of the truth you must understand, Lorgar,
Corpheron replied. He put two fingers together in the gesture of blessing, but pointed them to the heavens, at the pale disk of the sun that could be seen through the weave of the awning.
We are all slaves beneath the gaze of the powers.
143. Corpheron retired to his rooms to continue his studies, while Axarta and his warriors finished the cleansing of the declined. Nairo, when his many labours gave him brief opportunity, observed Lorgar on a box at the rail, watching the execution and dismantling. He seemed even younger, dressed in the simple pale smock of a Covenant acolyte, the golden skin of his arms exposed. With headscarf removed, his scalp was revealed, with not a single hair upon it. It glistened with sweat, despite the shade of the awning. Corpse hawks had started to descend from the high thermals, and the sand shifted and bulged around the footprints of the mercenary faithful, as subterranean scavengers moved through the desert, both drawn by the blood leaking into the dunes. The boy seemed not to notice this activity, his gaze in constant motion, shifting from one person to the next, only briefly dwelling for any time on an individual. Sanding brick in hand, Nairo made his way along the deck and started to work at the timbers near the boy, chafing away weathered paint with circular strokes. He kept his voice quiet when he spoke, though only a handful of the master's guards were on deck while the grim eradication of the declined continued.
What are you looking for, Lorgar?
Nairo asked.
Everything, Nairo,
the child replied with a solemn expression, not turning around.
I am trying to see it all, but there is too much.
All of what? And how do you know my name? The master made no introductions.
I heard all of your chatter as you approached the camp, and everything that has been said since I came aboard. I know all of the names that have been spoken, though I cannot put them all to people yet. The one there.
He pointed to a Carthracian in the camp, wearing a tight-fitting purple jerkin and black leggings, her long hair tied with dozens of silk ribbons of the same colours, loading pillaged jewellery onto a sand sled.
She is called Atharis. She curses frequently, and she looks many times at that one, the Catholic female Korshad. She desires her more than the gems she collects. There is another called Fabas, who is also talking much about Korshad's body, but he is below decks, and I have not yet seen him.
You see and hear all of that?
Nairo could not help but stare in wonder at Lorgar.
It is as though you see their hearts, their souls.
Is that possible? Now the child glanced down at Nairo, excited. These are just the movements on the surface, sounds and light. Can one really see a soul?
I think so, said Nairo. What else of yours could it be that blinded us?
I do not know, Lorgar replied sadly. The decline said that I was a water gift, but Corferon believes I am from the powers.
He does.
I hear him muttering to himself in his cabin below our feet, said the boy. He has fallen silent, just breathing.
He is likely reading, said Nairo, searching the texts for inspiration.
Will the texts explain what I am? Corferon promised that I will learn the truth. I think that means I will learn what it is I am. I know I am not a child of humans. I saw the infants of the declined, and they are not like me.
The Covenant has many lessons and prophecies, and the stories of the prophets are full of messages from the powers. If any man or woman can decipher their meaning, it will be the bearer of the word.
Lorgar said nothing else and returned his attention to the camp of the nomads, but Nairo noticed a small furrow in his brow as his eyes resumed searching the faces of the converts. 144. They left the remnants of the declined and continued into the desert, pressing on through Restive while Corferon spent time in his cabin, agitated by his discovery, attempting to divine its meaning with meditation and prayer. The relentless long noon heat dipped into wake rise and wake mane of post noon, and when they had slept again, the caravan began its preparations for dusk eve, heralded by a drop in the winds from the outlands that left the temple rig's bunting lank and limp on the masts and rails. At the very moment of the wind's last breath, almost to the horn call as wake rise became wake mane, Corferon appeared at the gangway from the lower deck. He looked to the lowering sun, face shielded by one raised hand, a bronze-bound tome in the other. The lookouts at the mastheads signalled a clear horizon with pennants of red. Return flags of the same fluttered on the standard poles of the outriders. At a nod from Corferon, the address system blared into life, a crackling note that summoned his faithful to the dusk mass. With practiced care, the land yachts tacked back towards the temple rig, while the great machine snarled and growled as brakes were applied, gears slipped and the engines forced into idleness. The other chariots, buggies and trikes of the caravan pulled alongside, forming an oval lager around the vehicle of their spiritual lord. The crews drew out their prayer shawls of brightly dyed wool and assembled on the deck of the shrine wagon and on the cooling sands around it. They drew the heavy shawls over their heads and shoulders and knelt, protected from the still considerable power of the sun. Corferon ascended to the lectern pilaster and looked over his gathering, seeing them as a mass rather than as individual slaves and converts. His eye was drawn to the small form of Lorgar, knelt among the slaves at the back of the congregation. The child stared up at Corferon with his keen gaze, drinking in every detail, boyish features lit on one side by the slowly setting sun. The preacher tried to push the youth from his thoughts, to bring forth the words with which he addressed the coming night. 145.
Now the peace of the eve is upon us.
His words carried the length of the caravan via the speaker system.
We are at transition.
Transition,
chorused the assembly. The higher-pitched voice of Lorgar a heartbeat later than the others, as he copied their response at a nudge from Nairo on his left.
This is the time of calm reflection, to consider the acts of the day and the duties of the night. The burning sun gives way to the cold stars. The powers do not slumber, though their blazing eye is turned elsewhere, for in the vaults of the Empyrean above they show us the path on which we must travel.
Corferon turned towards the coming night and held out his open hand. A solitary light twinkled in the distance just above the horizon.
Behold, the first star, night eye of the powers, the guide.
The guide,
whispered the congregation, again with the jarring echo of Lorgar's late but enthusiastic intonation. Corferon pressed on despite the disruption.
Across the Empyrean, the powers have scattered their messages.
He held up the heavy tome in his hands, the Book of Heavenly Scripts, proffering it to the invisible powers above.
As we transition from day to night, heat to chill, action to contemplation, I shall consult the oracles of the skies and seek the truth.
The truth.
This time Lorgar's timing was almost perfect, though whether out of instinct or earlier prompting by his companions, Corferon could not know. He placed the Book of Heavenly Scripts on the lectern and suppressed a sigh as he considered the day's events. There was no point hiding from the fact that it had been a remarkable day. If he said nothing regarding Lorgar, the converts and slaves would simply fill the void with their own superstitious musings. Better to set the tone from the outset and establish his authority.
Today, we have witnessed a marvel.
He motioned for Lorgar to rise.
Stand up, child.
Lorgar rose as commanded, swamped by the heavy shawl of many colours that one of the slaves had given to him. Even so, there was undeniable strength and dignity in his poise.
The powers delivered unto us this boy, Lorgar. We saved him from a questionable fate at the hands of the desert savages. Do not be fooled by outward appearance. They are the declined, unworthy to even set foot within the cities of Colchis. Their souls have been touched by faithlessness, their families and ancestors cursed to roam the wilderness for their sins. And that curse would have leaked into the soul of Lorgar had he remained with them. It is our turn, our right, to raise him in the ways of the truth. I shall be his master, but we must all be his teacher. I am the bearer of the word, but we all must bear the burden of his education. Think on this for the hour of contemplation. Remember that the powers have given us this time to ponder the mysteries of their universe. And one such mystery has entered our lives this day. Lorgar, you have many questions, but the answers you seek will only be found through study, obedience, and adherence to the edicts of the truth. Tonight, I shall begin your instruction in astromancy, so that in time you too shall discern the wisdom and missives of the powers. But first, you must learn the scriptures of our forebears. Corferon waved for Lorgar to kneel again, and then raised his hands to the Empyrean, eyes closed. He took a moment to give silent thanks to the powers for this boon, for though he had tried to remain strong after his castigation and exile, and though the light of the powers fell upon him each day, he knew they could see the doubts that had assailed his thoughts of late. Lorgar was reward for his perseverance, confirmation that he was still on the correct course across the wildlands of the powers' arcane design. He needed no surer sign of his destiny than that which had been sent to him clad in the guise of a child, a pupil ready to be enriched with faith and the truth. What else would better show the people of Colchis that a new age had dawned, an age with the covenant broken down and rebuilt by the hand of the great Corferon? He opened his eyes, feeling the strength of the powers radiating afresh from his body, invigorated by their blessing. His followers looked to him, ready and willing to do his bidding, eyes bright and hungry for his law and his law. Unto him they had placed their souls, and he would not fail them. Receiving his nod, as one, they chanted together. 146.
Great powers, dwellers in the Empyrean, hear today our thanks for thy creation, and thy merciful aversion of thy divine wrath at our trespasses. King of storms, Lord of blood, hear today our thanks for thy strength, and thy protection from the conquests of the impure. Queen of mysteries, Lady of Fate, here today are thanks for thy knowledge and thy watchfulness against the hazards of uncertainty. Prince of Hearts, Sire of Dreams, here today are thanks for thy inspiration and thy indulgences of our mortal ambitions. Princess of Life, Mother of Hope, here today are thanks for thy vigour and thy generosity in times of need and austerity. Praise be to the prophets. Praise Cain. Praise Tezan. Praise Slanat. Praise Narag.